Chief Rav Nidati Pensway and Rehovot and Chayfritz and very good Hekshe. Yerushalayim used to be. There's no Chief Rav now. When the new Chief Rabbi comes in, I hope he'll fix it up.
Well, I read the Times.
Yeah.
And there's a David Brooks, I just apologize, who wrote an he was pomegranate,
right? I saw her, and then he was...
The mayor's elevation.
Yeah, they toured and they just listened.
The mayor's elevation's wife was a real sharp lady.
Right, that's I told you that. She's it's a sharp couple. Yitz, what's bothering you? I see you have...
I wanted to say that Pesach is the holiday for massacres.
No, the side of really. I don't know. I had no problem shopping the other day, so Baruch Hashem. Anyway... Yitzchak, there was no shear this week, so he didn't give me anything on Rav Asher Weiss.
Where
do I go? Well, I always go to Shikma, Rami Levi in Talpiot. And I got to tell you, the prices are less than ever. It's beyond words. You get eight bottles of soda for the price of six. Every year, I can't. Pesach, Sukkot, Kala Kabbalah.
Good quality wine.
Pennies, cakes that without anyone can eat it. Lochle kidneyot, non-kidneyot. Rav Chalap, Rabbanit, Rav Chalap, it's a reliable Ashkenazi, Rav Zulman Chalap's cousin. 10 shekel, beautiful brownies, a whole...
What's your attitude to
kidneyot? I personally don't eat kidneyot, but kidney derivatives I eat. We were in 69, I asked Rav Untermann, he told me Minigam welcome here, but today... The only reason I have to eat kidney derivatives is for margarine. There's no margarine that doesn't have kidney. It's a terrible story. I've told the story before. I don't want to repeat it. It's the Eda Charedit undermines our health and undermines the ability to be v'samach the b'chakecha. It's not that. Telma is not going to switch their production line to cottonseed oil if the Eda Charedit won't accept it as non-kidney. That's the start and end of it.
Mazola,
what about Mazola? What do they have? Corn? Don't they have corn? Yeah, and it's made here. Margarine, I'll take a look. I'll look. Yeah, the Rami Levi is all over, but I go there. It doesn't matter, Mahadri, not Mahadri. They're still going to have kidney products. The Sfadim eat it. Svatim going to have long beards and long payas, and they eat kidney at Baruch Hashem. They eat beans. They gave me a
mustard.
They make now kosher Pesach ones, but it's considered made kidney. I don't know. I can't answer. But there is a kosher Pesach mustard. It's made for Svatim. I can do without mustard, but my greatest treat on Pesach is matzah with margarine. Okay, maybe we have to get butter and melt it down. Margarine, it smears nicely. Well, it's healthier, but it's machlokes ha'poskim today. Anyway, let's come back here. We're not going to solve these problems. We're going to enjoy the chag no matter what. Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, today is Sunday, March 10th, 2013, and I guarantee you I'll have a bigger crowd tomorrow when I speak Narishkeit than on Sunday when I'm giving a very, very important shiur. But kach yidaka shel chayim. The
friend of Brian here,
right?
He gave up sock.
They
were not allowed to use the calendar of the
Goyim.
I didn't get
it. It's a can't be. You can't use the calendar of the Goyim because the Gemara uses it. Rosh Hashanah Shel Malachim. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Abba Rosh Hashanah. But I'll tell you a good story. But it doesn't matter. Don't get excited. There was a big machlekes with the Chevra Kadisha in Yerushalayim. This is a true story. And the Chevra Kadisha was not allowing people to put a secular date on the tombstones. So Chevra Kadisha went to Bagatz and asked for the right to put on, in addition to the Hebrew date, the secular date. So the Bagatz, the people defending the Chevra Kadisha, turned to Rav Ovadia, who was then chief rabbi, and he wrote a letter. There was only one problem. The letter comes to the Bagatz, to the Beit Mishpat Elyon, whatever they call it, the Urim. And on the letter are two dates, Hebrew and the general date. So the judges ruled unanimously if Rav Ovadia can use March, whatever today is, March 10th, 2013, they can put it on a tombstone. And you will see occasionally, particularly Russians, have the dates there. But at least it's better than New York, where the Russians had their pictures on the tombstone.
If,
Rabbi Hutner, Rav Hutner, my neighbor, Rabbi Shutner, wrote checks with only a Hebrew date. You follow me? And the banks have to honor it here. Takanot of the banks, they have to honor a check that has only a Hebrew date. Okay, but let's read. Gentlemen, Rav Heschel Schechter, in the interview, I love that interview with him, as I showed you the parts that we can all agree to talk about, the parts where the Rav throwing darts at his students. I got into a lot of trouble when I once spoke about it, and people, there were endless websites, how cruel the Rav was, how everyone views it as they would like the Rav to be a sugar daddy. But all I can tell you is I saw the Rav in his later years, went into the shir, he was a sugar daddy. I cried and pitied the students, because not one of them is going to come out of Lamdin Mufak. But when the Rav hit you hard, believe me, you wanted to shape up. Now we come to that fabulous question. How do you paskin? Where do you paskin? I showed you the Gemara and Satan. That Gemara you have to analyze and reanalyze. And the Gemara yells at people who open up a Mishnah, and they paskin from the Mishnah, and they don't understand the roots, the principles. Nevertheless, we paskin from the Shulchan Aruch. If you can't paskin from a Mishnah, how can you paskin from the Shulchan Aruch? So, and I showed you the Masha yells, screams, denigrates people who paskin from the Shulchan Aruch. There's a tremendous literature on this topic. I'm told that Rabbi Broid, I just saw Danny Schulman showed me something Rabbi Broid has just published or publishing or working on, and he's going to deal with the Mishnah Berurah. It's going to be very interesting to see how he deals with the authority of the Shulchan Aruch, because Rabbi Broid, Professor Broid, who I know personally, is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he knows what he is saying. For the Haredi world, he's a bitter pill because he doesn't have that same emotional attachment that some of us have to the Haredi world. And it's a good thing they didn't choose him for chief rabbi of England, because there would have been World War III there. Be it as it may, it's interesting to see how he deals with it. But I showed you already in the Achronim that they bring down that today you can paskin from the Shulchan Aruch because you have so many commentaries, you can start to understand the Shach, the Taz, beyond the Shach and Taz, you have the Drisha, the Prisha, there's so many different commentaries that are written that you can start to understand. Okay, to understand the Shulchan Aruch and understand what you're doing, and it's not just paskining like a parrot, reading the words of the Mishnah, reading the words of the Shulchan Aruch, or reading or repeating like a little kid who really doesn't understand the words of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. But then I say, can I'm on the Shulchan Aruch? I showed last week, that's the Sharei Tshuva, it's right there. But then we asked a tremendous question at the end of the class, and that's the question that anyone studying the history or the dynamics of the halacha has to ask. Professor Alone deals with it, but I'm sure Professor Broid will deal with it, and the Rav dealt with it in private conversation with the Rav, and you have to ask the question, why was the Shulchan Aruch so privileged that everyone accepts the Shulchan Aruch as the posek acharon? I think, first of all, the first answer I gave is very important. You understand this thought process. Maimonides never explained why he paskined what he paskined. And this is why every kid who comes along who wants to show off that he's a Talmud Chacham, wants to impress a girl or the girl's parents, you do a kuntres, an article, why the Shulchan Aruch, well, why the Rambam paskind, what his source was, what his mental development was, and you write, and then you're refuted, and someone writes a different article, and more has been written on the Rambam than any other sefer ever written. Until today, I don't have to tell you, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ma'alei Adumim, Rav Nachum Rabinovich, is devoting his life to coming out with a new perush on the entire Rambam. And it goes on and on.
But the Rambam rarely gave the sources where he got it.
That's exactly what we're saying. He never gave the sources. The Ravitz, the Rabbat said about the Rambam, if you would have said these words, where did you go? To RJJ? Where did you go when you first came to America?
Hebrew Academy of Essex County.
Got it. If you would say in Hebrew Academy of Essex County what the Ravitz said about the Rambam, they would have thrown you out of the school for a week, suspended indefinitely for 1 week. All right, but for other reasons. The Ravitz says about the Rambam, the Rabbat, pardon me, Meshuga Ish HaRuach. What's amazing about the Shulchan Aruch is you have this entire thought process from the Kesef Mishnah to the Beit Yosef to the final Psak. And this is an absolute factor in why the Shulchan Aruch is privileged. A second factor, which also is extremely important, every book of law is written for a separate division of Jews. As Yitzchak just said, compared to the Sfadim, when Pesach comes, we are masochists. I don't know if I agree with him anymore, but certainly when I came in Aliyah, that was absolutely true. For an Ashkenazi in the 69, 70, early 70s, Yom Kippur War, there was nothing to eat on Pesach outside of matzah, potatoes, beets, and a few fruits. Nothing else to eat. Today, Kanayin Hara, even if you don't use any May Kitniyot, there is plenty to eat. And if you're a Sfardi in Israel, there's no Pesach. All you're doing is in place of bread. You're having matzah. They make matzah. They make pizza on Pesach. You have no idea. I'll tell you one little true story. I don't know if I wrote the story up in Washington, but maybe I didn't want to write it to embarrass Rabbi Lichtenstein. But do you know that the rabbinate spends millions of dollars kashering the army before Pesach? It's a fabulous undertaking. And this we can be very proud of, despite what some so-called Haredim have said recently about going into the IDF. So they call up the entire rabbinate. So for many years before Pesach, I was called up. I was still in my 30s, into my 40s. We would sort out rice. I'm an expert. I can teach you how to sort out rice before Pesach. But it's not important. You have to put a white tablecloth out and you move the rice. And anything that's not white, you see immediately, you have to pull it out. But we also had the kasha. So 1 year, Rabban and yours truly, we find ourselves in a Favofana base in the Jordan Valley. And we're kashering, and we have a whole crew under us, and all types of equipment, and blowtorches. And a Sfatic guy comes over and says, "Kfol Tarabanim, atam yicholim lasot lanu tova." And he tells us they have a special treat they make on Pesach. They need a frying pan with matzah, with eggs, with jelly. And can we kasher this a few frying pans? So I look at Aaron and I say, "Aaron, we need a... This is a job, this needs aish, this is a frying pan, this is not a simple matter to kasha." Yeah. So we take a blowtorch and we start blowing on the frying pan. Within a minute, the whole don pan falls apart, the handle, the frying pan. So we a Lieben, you need a Lieben, according to the rabbi, Lieben Gomer. Had we come from Chicago, we could have been more makil, because Rav Regensburg was more makil. He says, "You never fry without some liquid in it today." All right, finished. So you see, every Shulchan Aruch is made. The Ashkenazim live one way, the Sfadim live another way, the Taimaniyim live another way. The greatness of the Shulchan Aruch is that within a few months, actually, months, the Ramah wrote a commentary on it, and the Shulchan Aruch is covered by the Mappah, and you now have a volume that is available for everybody, Ashkenazim and Sfadim. it conquered the market. A third reason, which may be a prejudiced reason that only someone like Rakefet, who lives in Israel, loves Israel, believes in Israel, and someone like Rakefet, who has not cut out of his Torah, many good Jews don't read Parshat Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha, they have a Kiddush club that doesn't begin with the Haftorah, but it begins with Kriyat HaTorah. And the only ones left there, they barely have a minion, and then a Kohen and a Levi and a few guys to call up. And all these people have children living in Israel. Everyone else, the last Pasha, they want to hear, Lech Lecha, Me'atzecha, Me'modchatcha, Me'beit Avit, Alut HaShareyecha, it's not for me. Wow, we're so happy here, it's so wonderful, we have pomegranate, we're thriving. What a world, what a Satmar Chassid was, a high school Rebbe in Queens. I met him in Florida. It was like talking a different language. He looks at me, Israel, who needs Israel? It's so good in America. I can teach Gemara, I can make a living, I can come to Florida with my wife. Oh my gosh. Satmar Chassid, 20% Jew, 80% assimilation in his values. And I sign on what I said, 2080, Rakefet signs, 99% correct, Aaron Rakefet. But I say there's a third reason, and others have said it too, that the Jew loves Israel. What Israel meant to a Jew, what it meant to me in Solanta when the UN was voting on partition and my teachers were crying, and a little kid sees adults, and many of them wouldn't even show me Shabbos. You read Washington, you know what Rakefet writes about. And every blog in the world with someone over 70 says Rakefet hit the nail on the head. The teachers were maskilim, were lo yitzlachnikim, had to make a living. I saw teachers from the greatest Hasidic yichus when they taught bar mitzvah kids on Shabbos. They opened the chumash and they told the kid, put the $1 bill in here, and then close the chumash on the dollar bill. You understand? I saw that with my own eyes. I'm not telling you tales out of Canterbury. I saw that with my own eyes. But a Jew loves Eretz Yisrael. How the teachers were crying. How we raised funds with the Zionist flag. I write about it in Washington. Need not tell you. The breeze of Tzfat is blowing in the air. When you look at the Shulchan Aruch. Now, let me go further. Shulchan Aruch became so important, so central, so focal. And I explained to you the Rav's magnificent explanation based upon the Rambam that Hiskimu Aleihem Kol Yisrael. This is not just in relation to the Gemara. I trust you went through the Hakdam of the Rambam to the Mishnah Torah. It's a very important piece of work. And the Rambam deals with that very problem. How do we accept every outcome that the Gemara tells us? Why can't we argue? Why Beit Hillel? Why not Beit Shammai? It's a wonderful question. Why Rabbi Yochanan? Why not Rish Lakish? A wonderful question. And the Rambam says, because it's Kimalayim, it's ongoing machloket, but you can't live with controversy forever. And a process of what we call in modern Hebrew, hitgabshut. In English it would be, I think the best word is crystallization, takes place, and we've accepted Beit Hillel, not Beit Shammai. And this repeats itself. And the same thing with the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is privileged to be accepted by every Jew wherever he is. And let me show you something very fascinating dealing with a contemporary problem. And you'll see the reticence, the hesitance. Again, in modern Hebrew, these are all modern words. When I was growing up, we didn't know these words. Hisusim. You know that word? Ha-hisusim that poskim have to go against the Shulchan Aruch. And let me give you an amazing source in a minute and take you into a different world. Now, this is a world that I spoke about for many, many months in the Kollel, many decades ago already. It's a contemporary problem. We have today in Israel, in gathering of the exile, Jews have come in from tens and tens of different countries. Go to the Kollel on a Friday night and look around the different faces you will see. One time my wife and I were walking up the hill from Machon Lev to Gris, and a whole group of blacks were walking down. My wife started to shiver. She thought she was in New York. I said, honey, are you out of your mind? You're in Israel. These are kids with kippot on their heads. Sure enough, the kids walked closer, going to Machon Lev, all of them with big kippot, more than a chatzi shekel worth, on their heads. Big kippot. You're gathering the exiles. Tell me, who's Jewish, who's not Jewish? It's a real problem. I'm davening in the shtiblach, and I see this guy davening and shuckling, and I look at him, and I look at him, and I finally asked Rabbi Run, Donnie Run, who built the shtiblach, why you musmach? I said, Donnie, who is that guy? He's an Afro-American, 100%. He says, yeah, you're right. How does he come to be such a fool Jew? So Ani told me the story that none of you will understand because you didn't grow up, but the older people who grew up in my time will understand it. Every shul in New York had a little apartment downstairs where the janitor, whatever you want to call him, the custodian lived. So this kid's father was the custodian of this shul. And the kid grew up every Shabbos. He helped clean up, helped his father, came to Kiddush, and when the kid was 16, he said to his father, I never saw such nice people like the Jewish people. I want to be Jewish. His father says, go talk with the rabbi. The rest is history. So who is a Jew? Who is a Jew? Now I want to ask you a question. We have Karaites in Israel. Are they Jewish? Aren't they Jewish? Yes, I'm asking a serious question. We have some very few, but I think there are two people in the class sitting in front of me now who are not married. Okay, am I right? Nathanael and Daniel, am I right? Okay, you walk along, and you meet this fabulous girl, good looks, intelligent, fear of God, and you propose marriage, and the girl says to you, I'm a Karaite. Not, but she goes further. She says, you know something? I like the Jewish people. I've grown up in Israel. I served in the army. I've rubbed shoulders all my life with Jews. I want to convert. No, can she convert or can't she convert? Can we accept her? Can't we accept her? Karaite? I understand what you're saying. Evan Ezra, Perek Dalad, at the very last halacha, Lamed Zion, right at the end, Hagat HaRama, it's talking about Yichus. And you should know, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't touch this problem in the Shulchan Aruch. I don't want to go into more detail because he does touch it in the Beis Yosef. But the Rama, Hagah, Hakaraim Asur Lechit Chatein Bahem. Here's the answer to your question, why not? The Kulam Chem Sofet Mamzerim, the Eim Kablim Altam, Im Rotsim Lag Zar.
Is that the
halacha
today?
Well, one second. Don't. First of all, let's understand the halacha. Because they became Karaites, they no longer observed much of rabbinic Judaism.
But they do observe.
they no longer observe much of rabbinic Judaism, which wouldn't bother us if they don't set a blech on Shabbos and they don't leave lights on, they don't use a time clock, all that. But they don't have a proper get. Now, these were Jews originally. This is what Nachum alluded to. If they were Jews originally and they got divorced but didn't have a get, the woman remarried, it gets a mamzerim, suffolk mamzerim. Okay, so you should know that the Mechaber is notal lahakel in the Beis Yosef. Our problem is he didn't put it into the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama asks. Now, you're asking me, halacha lemaisa? Well, what I would suggest for Nathanael and Daniel, they go to Rav Ovadia, tell them the story, claim, you know, tell them they've come in Aliyah, Maran Beit Yosef. I'm not totally positive, but 99% sure that Rav Ovadia will write a tshuva lahakel. You understand that since you're living in Israel, Maran Beit Yosef, etc. But this is what the Rama paskin. Now, I want to show you the authority of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama. Let's talk of the Shulchan Aruch. It's the Rama as well. It's the table with the tablecloth.
You told us that in the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo did not deal with it.
Right, he dealt with it. And he was
How does he deal with it in the Beit Yosef?
He was Mekil. Mekil. But he doesn't repeat the Kula in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Rama is Machmir. Now, a lot has been written on this. I'm telling you this in parentheses, because all of you know as a Talmud of the Rav, I don't like to get involved in the sociological and economic inferences that may have cut into the halacha or affected the halacha or influenced the halacha. But it could very well be that the reason the Beit Yosef was Mekil, that in the Sephardic countries, the Karoyim and the Jews got along. They treated each other as cousins. There was no enmity between them, or very little. In Eastern Europe, where there were Karaitic settlements, they hated the Jews with a passion. And many times there was controversy and bad blood. So this could very well explain the Rama vis-a-vis the Beit Yosef.
They have a few shuls in your
shalach. I don't know a few, but they exist. They exist. They're here.
There is documented evidence that in the Russia area, the Karaites even claimed that they were not Jews.
Right. And also with Hitler, they claimed they were not Jews. With Hitler too. Although it didn't help them that much.
If what?
But I have to tell you this, a tshuva of the Rabbaz. Again, I don't want to go into great detail because this is a very fascinating topic. But it's not so simple to declare someone a mamza on the basis he comes from a community, as you will see in a minute, where they didn't do gittin. Why? Who says his parents got divorced? And if his parents, is a famous tshuva of the Rabbaz. And if his parents got divorced, who said she remarried? And if she remarried, who said she had children? And if she had children, who said they survived? Now, if you know the sugya in the fourth perek in Kedushin, a Suffolk mamsa, made the midioraita, is muta levo bakal. Midioraita.
Maybe the Kedushin was no good
either. That's all right. That we say afterwards. But it's the first generation. They got married properly. You understand? Afterwards, we can say there was pasul ereda, etc., etc. Gentlemen, this question came up in Israel, and it came up very, very big. Not with the Karoyim. There is very little intermarriage between the Karoyim and the rabbinic Jews here, to use their expression. When there was intermarriage, there was Sephardic Rabbanim who were Mekil. But the B'nai Israel of India. In India, you have regular Jews who wound up there in the 19th century, when India was a British protectorate, and these were Jews who came from all over the world to do business in India, correct? The overwhelming majority were Sephardim, mainly Iraq, Some of them became multi-millionaires. In addition, in India, you had a B'nai Israel that no one knew for sure what their exact background is. Could very well be that they were part of the 10 lost tribes. They did not have the rabbinic tradition. And here, they come in Aliyah, and you all know that I believe I don't know if there are any B'nai Israel Jews left in India. If they are, they're Batal B'Shishim. Because almost the entire community came an Aliyah. And problem came up. They integrate. You understand? The first generation has it hard. There's no question that coming to a different country in a different language and a different mentality, it's not easy. Today it's a lot easier, let's say, for Russians and Americans, because, to give you a simple example, the other night we had an engagement party. I have, at the present time, Baruch Hashem, 3 engagements of grandchildren. One that was, one that will be shortly, one that will be after Pesach. Kanai and Hara, God should bless them. So we had an engagement party. I had an engagement party, 2 families together. One family, survivors of the Holocaust, and one family, survivors of the spiritual Holocaust in the United States. A miracle of Israel. The family that survived the Holocaust got here right after World War II, totally integrated. Everyone speaks Hebrew. The American family, here for 44 years, 5 generations, my parents, my generation, my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and everyone is speaking English. And when we have to interact with the other family, we break into perfect Hebrew. So like Malka says, it's shocking to them. They all had to break their teeth, master Hebrew. But today, Baruch Hashem, computers, you have to know English, university, postgraduate school. Has anyone studied medicine in Israel? What kind of textbooks do you use? Have you studied aeronautical engineering? The minute you get it beyond the basic courses, what kind of textbooks do you use? So you see, it's easier. Even for the Russians today, it's easier because there's an entire Russian community. By the way, from the point of view of Torah, it's very bad because no one feels the need to convert. You can live here, and do you ever see Russian television? It's beyond words. Outside of the Israeli flag that's behind the Kayanim, the radio and the TV announcers, everything is in Russian. Everything is in Russian. I think I'm back in Moscow. I think I'm back in Leningrad, etc. Okay? So you have the B'nai Israel. They had it hard, but then they start to integrate. And many of them were very successful. Many of them are good business people. And many of them are brilliant people, become medical doctors, top quality people. Their children already are intermarrying. The children are in the army. And the question comes to Chief Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. Can we marry them? Now let me tell you where you find the question. Again, a few words about Rabbi Herzog. There's now a lot on the Rav and the Chief Rabbinate and why he didn't take it. And everyone is getting involved and giving their opinions. And as you know, when Rav Kook died, they searched for a chief rabbi. Let me tell you a little story that Rav Huttner told the story. I was shaking. I believe he heard the story from Rav Meir Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan. What happened? Rav Meir Berlin or Rav Meir Bar Ilan, if you've heard my lectures of years ago, a few years ago on religious Zionism, was the leader of the Mizrahi, put the Mizrahi on the map. Traveled all over the world. He comes to Ireland, And here in Dublin, the chief rabbi of Ireland is Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog was a Gaon Adir, was autodidactic. He grew up in France. He never went to yeshiva. He knew Kol HaTorah Kol. He was the greatest bucky of his generation. He was, with all due respects, chief rabbi of Ireland. If I tell you I could be a Hasidic Rebbe, I have a title. The maple with a Rebbe. Believe me, I'd be a good Rebbe. I don't want to mention some of the Rebbeim today, but if you know what's going on in the world, Rakefet would be a better Rebbe than most Hasidic Rebbeim today. Nu, Chabare, the maple with the Rebbe, get up covered, the maple with the Rebbe gate, they gate mit Zain Gaboyim, Zain Gabistis, Baruch Hashem. No, to be chief rabbi of Ireland, chief rabbi of Maplewood, New Jersey. With all due respects to Herbie, I'm not putting down Maplewood, South Orange. It's where we come from. It's no big deal. So after Havdalah, and Rav Herzog was very quiet, very reticent, very scholarly. He had a doctorate. I mean, well, a genius. You all know he did a doctorate in marine biology. So
what happened to his family?
What happened to his family? What are you talking about?
I'm religious.
What do you say? His Chaim Herzog wasn't a Shomer Shabbos? I don't know what you're talking about.
His kids, are they?
As far as I know, every last kid is Shomer Shabbos, including Yitzchak Herzog. We all make a mistake. We think only someone wearing a kippah is from. There are plenty of people who are Shomer Shabbos, which is the touchstone of religiosity. Even if they don't wear a kippah, we have to be mashpia on them. They should come back totally b'lev v'nefesh. But that's a different story. Very good children. And Reb Yaakov David Herzog, his other son, was a Gaon Adir. So Rav Herzog was very quiet. And after Havdalah, his Rebbetzin, Sarah Hillman, whose father was Av Beitin of London, she was a personality. I yet had the privilege of knowing her. Ziz geven an ishiyot, and she says, nu, Yitzchak, rek mit them, talk with them, what are you waiting for? And he says to Rav Meir Berlin, I heard the story from Rav Meir Berlin's right-hand man, my neighbor, Rav Yeshua Hutner, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, he says to Rav Berlin, in Yiddish, I have one dream, I want to go in Aliyah to Yerushalayim, and I'm even willing to be a shamus in a shul there. And he tells this to Rav Meir Berlin, it was either 35 or 36. 1937, he was elected chief rabbi of Jerusalem, of Israel. And I don't even believe Rav Berlin. I think Rav Berlin supported Rav Chalap. That was the other candidate, Zvulun Chalap's grandfather. He was, Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap was the other candidate. And he becomes chief rabbi, and what a chief rabbi, and why he wants to give him an honorary doctorate. And he sends a letter to Rabbi Revel, Al HaRishonim Anu Bochim. He says, I have such problems because I have a doctorate, the whole Haredi world, what you call Haredi today. Do you know, pokes fun at him because he has a doctorate. You want to give me a second doctorate? Al HaRishonim Anu Bochim. So he became a posek mufak with universal respect. What an individual. So the Shaila comes to him. Now, he never arranged his books for publication in his lifetime. He was caught up with the Holocaust. He was caught up with the State of Israel. 1,000,001 Shailas we never dreamt with. Michael, where do we have a Jewish army for 2,000 years? You understand? And he had to deal with it. I'm going to deal with your problem tomorrow, by the way. I sent you a message through your son, if you got it. But, what you asked me after class, you asked a major question. You asked a major question. But I'm going to give an answer tomorrow in depth that you should understand what's happening here. Okay? Anyone listening from Chutzlars, you know how many emails have come in already, they were with this, they will not even understand me, but you should grasp what I'm saying. So, all this came about after his death, the Sfarim, endless Sfarim have been published. It's a big plus, but there's a minus, and I'm just cautioning you, because if you get involved in research with Rav Herzog Sfarim, sometimes you never know what the end was. It was unfinished manuscripts. This particular tshuva, we have the entire manuscript. You'll find it in Heichal Yitzchak, Chelik Evan Ezra, Siman Yud Gimel. And this is the exact question. 1944, And he says, I got a question from the Sfadik Chief Rabbi, Rabban Tzion Meir Chayu Ziel, who knows all the minhagim of the Sfadik world. And he got the question, can we marry people from Bnei Yisrael? And he feels we should be able to, but he wants my approval. And he says, why is there such a shaila? Because they did not know the laws of Chalitza. They did not know the laws of Yibin. They did not know the laws of Gittin. They did not know the laws of Nida. Now, in recent times, they have accepted these laws. But here you have a tremendous problem that perhaps the kids are mamzerim, and what can an Ashkenaz rabbi say about this, considering the psak of the Ramah with the Karayim, which is very similar. Karayim, no Nida the way we observe it, no Gittin the way we observe it, no Chalitza the way we observe it, and yet when they want to come back, believe in Nefesh and marry a Jew and accept old Torah u'mitzvot, the Mechaber was making and the Beit Yosef, but the Ramah Asid, look at the tshuva, particularly on page Ayin Vav, it's a very long tshuva, and you'll see, I quote Rav Herzog, it is very hard to be mekil when the Ramah was machmir. You see how hesitant he is to paskin against the Ramah. But he says, nevertheless, the Ramah is dealing with Karayim. And we never had a total, complete, formal ban against the Bnei Yisrael. So maybe here we can be mekhil and it's not contravening or contradicting the Ramah. And he goes in, everything I told you about, all the sveikot, who says their parents got divorced, who says the parents remarried, who says she had children, who says the children lived, who knows if later generations there was not proper kedushin, they were mechalo Shabbos, they didn't know rabbinic law. So we have so many sveikot. And he says, here we have one advantage. We can ask the girl or the boy from Bnei Yisrael of Bombay, the Bnei Yisrael Jews of India, we can ask them, were your parents divorced? Were your grandparents divorced? If they tell us three generations, no divorce, then we have no problem whatsoever. Also, he brings down evidence from a Jewish traveler, Rav Sapir, Yaakov Sapir, who traveled there and wrote a travelogue in the 19th century. And he describes them in Hagim that they were like some of the Indian castes. If a woman's husband throws her out, she never remarries. She goes back home to her father's house. She never remarries. And the Bnei Yisrael, with no hate like this, acted like this. That immediately removes all problems of Mamzeret. So it's a very fascinating tshuva. But once again, you see how hesitant Rav Herzog was because of the psak of the Ramah in relation to the Karayim. And the saving graces, he limits it to Karayim. He does not talk about Bnei Yisrael. And he agrees lahalacha with Rav Uziel that they can intermarry. And Baruch Hashem today, I need not tell you, in the Tzioni-Dati world, you will find many descendants of the Bnei Yisrael of Hodu totally integrated, an integral part of Am Yisrael. And Halavai, the Kibbutz Galut, should continue, the Bnei Menashe. Hundreds have now come. Thousands more, tens of thousands all over the world. 100 years from now, Israel may be the largest country in the Middle East. Be'ezrat Hashem. We are larger than many Scandinavian, I think we're larger than every Scandinavian country today. You can check out how many millions they have and how many millions we have. Kanayin Hara. Another nail in the coffin of Hitler and the European countries who cooperated one way or another with Hitler. Yimach Shmam V'Zichram. A volume has just come out about Roosevelt and his role in World War II. I haven't read the reviews yet, but someone, my Talmud Steve Drosh, sent me an article from today's New York Times, I think it is, which I should look at with interest. Yes, Nachum?
He's making
a historical argument here. Is that argument? No, he's making halachic. You have to see it all true. It's what I'm telling you. All the sfeikot and well, and so he's saying, but he's troubled by the Ramah. The Ramah is taking his sleep away because the Ramah rasses the Karayim. So he's saying, here we can make El Zayin here, but you can see from his writings, he would be Mekil, he would agree with the Karayim, but he can't go against the Ramah. And the Ramah, you got to understand, the Beit Yosef, you have to see the Radbaz, the Sfeikot, etc., etc., etc. It's a fascinating topic. But this
is...
Well, no, it's not totally different because the Karaites are very, very simple to the Bnei Yisrael that they didn't know rabbinic tradition or they disregarded rabbinic tradition. You follow? That's the similarity. The Karaites annulled it and the Bnei Yisrael didn't know it. They were exiled before rabbinic tradition. They didn't have Hanukkah. They didn't know it. They didn't know what Gittin are. They didn't know how we do Chlitza, Yibum, etc., etc. There's a big similarity. Yeah. Right.
I asked if you have a mezuzah on the door. He says, of course. I says,
what's in the mezuzah?
I asked him,
it doesn't
have
a
second. So I can discover that after talking to him for quite a while, is that this is like an ethnic background. In other words, he's proud of the fact that he comes from a certain...
Right, I understand.
However, when it comes to halacha, his son had a bar mitzvah, his son puts on tefillin. In other words, the idea that he's a Karaite is something he's proud of. You know?
Right. But the kids may very well integrate. There have been marriages. The rabbinic today is no Tela HaKel with Karaites. Originally, you read about it in the newspapers that they marry Kedat V'Kedin and the Makabal Olam Ol Malchut Shemayim B'Lev Shalem. No, what you're saying is, if Luchumra, we would require what there's a Rashbash on this, there's Tshuvat HaRashbash, what Rakefet calls a ceremony of returning to the Jewish people. In other words, not to embarrass them that they need, but L'Ravcha D'Milta, if we only had a chief rabbinate that was sensitive to public relations, we may be privileged to have it in our lifetime yet. I will try to talk about it tomorrow. I have a lot to talk about. And Rabbi Betnash put me on notice that he's teaching at 11:30. I told him if I begin at 9, I'm not going to have energy to talk for 2.5 hours. But I like the fact he put me on notice. Gentlemen, we have arrived. Yeah, Nachum.
The same thing with Ethiopians when that came up?
The same Shiloh with the Ethiopians. You know what went on here, you know, and Chabad until today takes the stand. The Rebbe said they're not Jewish. No, they're not Jewish. If we had any seichel, we would have required all the Ethiopians in Mechon Lev go to mikveh to accept Omar Chut Shemayim. He understands that solves the whole problem. It's a Tshuvat HaRashbash, an anusim coming back to the Jewish people. But I don't want to go through everything. I got to teach what I want to teach. Gentlemen, we have arrived. So I asked Murray, I asked the Rav. Believe me, I didn't ask the Rev this question in the 1950s. Moshe, I would have been a frightened little kid, okay? Understand that. But in the late 70s, I already knew a little bit how to learn. I already had great students, you understand? I don't know if the Kollel didn't exist yet. It still begins 78. This was 78, the summer before the Kollel begins. So I asked Rebbe, when everything is said and done, can Paskinen... Can Negat the Shulchan Aruch can we paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? And the Rav gave me a very simple answer. I don't say you can't paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, but if you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, you better know exactly why. You can't just dismiss it. Man darf gut verstehen, für was man kann paskinen gegen die Shulchan Aruch. My dear students, on that answer, I want to spend the next few months elaborating. And let me give you a fabulous source that says it all. A source that all of you should have studied this year. If you're studying Shulchan Aruch, you're a Dayan. You all have heard of the Torah Tamima. Right or wrong, you grew up in the Torah Tamima, you had to give it the Vatori, you took that. I remember Bnei Akiva.
Epstein.
The Baruch Halevi Epstein, his daughter lived in the Bronx, you should know. East Bronx. Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein, whose was his father? Rabbi Chiyo Michal Epstein, the Aruch HaShulchan. But Rabbi Baruch Halevi didn't want to make a living out of the rabbinate. You know, many people who saw what their fathers suffered. Also, you know from my Monday class, Rabbi Tzolchanan's son, Rabbi Tzviyosh Rabinovitz, went into business rather than being the rabbinate. So Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein became a banker, right? You all know this. If you don't know it, open up Rakefet Aharon, Chelek Aleph. There's a monograph on the Baal Torah Tamima. However, he wrote a lot more than the Torah Tamima. He wrote a 3-volume memoir. Must be over 1,000 pages, the 3 volumes. B'kod Baruch, Zichronotai Mechayei Hador HaKodem. It is a fabulous work. And Rakefet may be the last person alive who went through every line and every page. What makes it difficult, who's gone through the Makor Baruch, he has Chidushei Torah all over the place. And he's as organized as he was, Herbie, in the Torah Tamima. That's how disorganized he is in the Makor Baruch. Can anyone tell me who got into a lot of trouble because of the Makor Baruch? And a lot has been written. J.J. Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schechter made a living out of the Makor Baruch's Taurus. No? This was Lakewood. Art Scroll took out of the Makor Baruch my uncle Dinitziv, some of his memoirs on Dinitziv. And the Lakewood Cheder gave it out in return for a donation. And lo and behold, they discovered that the Netziv is described as reading a Haskalah newspaper Friday night when he was too tired to learn. He read Hamelitz and some other newspapers, and it was the first time there ever was a recall of a book in modern times. Lakewood had to recall my uncle the Netziv, and the world went crazy. La'yudim hayta oda v'simcha v'sason v'ka. But I don't want to say King Tihalano. So in the Makor Baruch, it's a fabulous volume. Beginning on page, this is Chelek Shlishi. Takpak. What's Takpak? Takpak 583, am I correct? Rei Kuf, yeah. Takpak. Tav Kuf Pei Gimel. Beginning on page Takpak. Oh, I'm right. It's in English. The Takpat doesn't have double pages. I see in the next page already it's 1,166. So there's a pagination in Hebrew, a pagination in Roman letters. He's quoting the Talmud of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Now you have to understand who Reb Chaim Volozhin was. Reb Chaim Volozhin was not only the Talmud Muvhak of the Vilna Gaon, but Rav Chaim Volozhin, more than anybody else, related the traditions of the Vilna Gaon. Okay, 1 second, I just want to put back my papers here, because I'm going to... get mixed up. Give me 1 second. Okay, this goes here. Keep it organized. Okay, this goes here. Okay, so he's quoting Rabbi Eliyahu Goldberg, who is a Talmud of Reb Chaim Volozhin, and Reb Chaim Volozhin was the entire source of what we know about the Vilna Gaon from his Hakdamah to the Shulchan Aruch, his Hakdamah to Kabbalistic Sfarim, where he talks about his Rebbe. He edited some of his Rebbe's writings. And Rabbi Eliyahu Goldberg is telling the Makor Baruch one of the fabulous stories about the Chaim Volozhin. What's the story? Look into the Shulchan Aruch. Tzadivav, Yoredeya. Sif Katan Aleph. I repeat. Hilchot Basav Chalav, Yoredeya. Tzadivav, Sif Katan Aleph. Gentlemen, you learned this, right? Tzinon El Silka. Shechatcha besachin shol basa ben yomo. Asur lachlam b'chalav. Ad sheyitol b'mikom hachatach kedei netilat mokom shehu ka'ovi etzpa. What are we talking about? You've learned this or not? First of all, what does the word silka mean? How did you explain it? How did Rabbi Betnash explain it? What is snow? Radish. Silka, looking to the Shach, he explains it, tardin. In modern Hebrew, tered is spinach. I never knew tered to be sharp. Could be what it means, beets. And could be there are beets that are very pungent, very sharp. You tell me the halacha. You cut a loaf of bread with a milchik, a knife, and you want to eat it fleishiks. Allowed or not allowed? No, paskin for me. A woman came running to you Friday night. I cut the challah. The first, you have to ask her a simple question. Was the knife clean? Yeah, the knife was spotless. No shayla. Eat the bread with chicken fats. Enjoy. No. You cut a radish with a sakin shel basar that was a ben yomo, that you had just cut liver with this knife, cleaned off the knife, and now you cut the radish? Can you use that radish with milk? You want to put it in the cottage cheese?
The knife is clean.
No. Ben yomo, pungent. We say the knife absorbs, and if the knife absorbs and you're cutting, the radish absorbs from the knife. And you cannot have it with milk. All right? Halacha psuka. You have to have separate knives, goes without saying. Okay? Or you got to cut power. But we all have power today. You saw what's all over the world. You can buy in Machne Yehuda all the knives you want. And on the way to Machne, there's a cheap store now. Knives with handles blue, red, yellow. What a world. What a world. Okay. Fine. Halacha psuka. I don't yet know what silka means for sure. I tried to find sources. I can't get beyond the Shach. The Shach says tardin. Well, in modern Hebrew, teret is spinach. Selek are beets. But there is reason in the Gemara, it could very well be that tardin or teret meant something from the beet family. All right, whatever. He tells the following story. Reb Chaim Volozhin, this is before he had a yeshiva. What happened before he had a yeshiva? What used to go on in Bris? Reb Chaim sat at the head of a table in the Briska Shtibel, the Briska Cloys, and students came in from all over Europe and sat next to him, and he was learning, and he was teaching, and they were asking. Reb Chaim Volozhin is sitting at the head of the table. Students are sitting there, the greatest minds, and a woman comes in. And the woman says, Rebbe, I have a difficult question. I prepared radish with gribbins, what we call chicken fat. You don't know what chicken fat, we don't eat it today. It's not considered healthy, but when we grew up, there wasn't a Shabbos meal without chicken fat. Whatever. And I prepared it with the chicken fats, and afterwards I realized that the knife with which I cut the radish was a milchaka knife. No? What's the psak from the Shulchan Aruch? What would you have to paskin? It's a ben yomo. You ask her, when did you use the knife with milchaka? So I used it 2 hours before. 2 hours before? Treif, basav v'cholov. And instead of paskening that way, Rab Chaim asked her, what was the color of the radish? Was it black or white? And the woman answered, the radish was white. Its skin was white. Rav Chaim said, the skin was white, no problem. You can use it, no shaila. And the woman walked out happy. The students went berserk. They said, Rebbe, you just paskened against the Shulchan Aruch. What difference does it make if the radish was white or the radish was black? What kind of question is that? And Reb Chaim said, my dear students, allow me to teach you a lesson in how to paskin. You're absolutely right. The Shulchan Aruch declares that a radish is pungent. I don't agree with the Shulchan Aruch. I don't think a radish is pungent. But you cannot paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. To use the words of the Rav, in relation to the Shulchan Aruch, Hiskimu Aleihem Kol Yisrael. So I'm caught in a web. On one hand, I don't want to paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. On the other hand, I don't agree with the Shulchan Aruch. I have to be intellectually honest. So I asked her what the color of the radish is. When she told me it's white-skinned, I solved my problem. Because in Eretz Yisrael, the radishes are black-skinned. Those are the ones they're talking about that are pungent. That's what the Mechaber meant when he paskened black and white. A radish is Dava Harif, right? That's the term we use. And it's pungent. And it conveys what it absorbs. And you can't mix meat and milk with that knife. But here she told me the radish is white. The radish is white? Those are the radishes that grow in Russia. They are not pungent. They are not sharp. That is not the type of radish that the Mechaber asked. And he says, I want you to understand, whenever you deal with the Shaila, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins against the way you are inclined to paskin, you better be able to figure out who gave you the right, what permits you to go against the Shulchan Aruch. And that's Reb Chaim Volozhin. That's my Rebbe. That's his answer. Powerful.
What would he have said if she would have said black?
He would have asked. He would have asked. And the truth of the matter is that you can taste in radishes. The ones in Israel are red today. Although I have seen black-covered radishes, but in Italian vegetable stores, the black-covered radishes are very pungent. They are more pungent than normal radishes. I don't know whether we can consider these red radishes davar charif. I'm not certain. It's interesting, the ones that we have in Israel today. Interesting. Did you discuss this? Did you look into it? Has Rav Ovadia have a tshuva on it? It's a fascinating question. But this is Rav Chaim Volozhin. What a difference. What insight. What a little story that conveys so much.
The Chacham Devot follows the Chacham Tzvi on the second day Yom when the Shulchan Aruch asked the other way.
I can't believe what Yitzchak just asked, because that was exactly what I'm going to touch upon right now. How did this whole discussion begin? Because I was discussing with the Rav Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni is a classic issue. The issue came up just today at Talmud, who studied in the Kollel in the 1980s, had a very fascinating question to ask me just today on Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni, if you look into the Mechaber, okay, you'll see that the Mechaber Paskins, when you go to America, you observe one day, but you don't do Malacha B'Parhesi, you don't embarrass the other Jews. Plain and simple. The Mechaber makes no mention of tourists who come to Israel. And if you took the Mechaber at face value, you wouldn't have a problem at all. You would say, look, when you come to Israel, it's one day for everybody. But when you go to America, it can be Shabbos the second day, but it's like every other Israeli. But when you go to America, you're a member of the Israeli community, and that's why you observe only one day. All right, fine. If this would be the case, there would be no problem. Our problem begins because after the death of the Mechaber, they collected whatever tshuvot were extant at the time, and they put out the Avkat Rachel. Avkat Rachel is from Shir HaShirim. It means the spices that people who were peddlers going from door to door, the spices that they were selling. Avkat Rachel. There's another collection of tshuvot of Rabbi Yosef Karo. It's called the Beis Joseph. That came out many, many years later. That's essentially on Evan as a Shelet and Tshuvat Beis Joseph. But the Avkat Rachel is a collection of Tshuvat on many topics. There you have the question in reverse. Students who come from Chutz Laretz, from America, to study in Eretz Yisrael, what do they do with Yontif Sheni? And the Rama and the Mechaber says, the Beis Joseph says, 100% that they observe two full days. Even more, who's looked into the Avkat Rachel? Who can tell me more? Chesky, not only do they observe two full days, but he says, Eidut Nemana, that from time immemorial, there were Yontif Sheni Minyanim in Yerushalayim. So you see, you now have the balance. You can't escape the psak of the Mechaber. Right or wrong? You might say, and this is what Nachum indicated, and I said it semi-seriously, partially as a joke, many, many years ago, that the reason the Mechaber didn't deal with anyone coming here, who came here, who traveled here. You came to stay. It wasn't like today. But from Eretz Yisrael, they were always going to Chutz Laretz for one simple reason. HaKesev Yaneh Takol. Chalukah. We need money. Shadarim. What is the word? Shadarim. It's Rashi Teva. Shalichim Durabanan. That we are going for a holy purpose. And holy people going there to collect money. Could be. That's why the Mechaber doesn't deal with the reverse case. Nevertheless, the Rav Paskind one day in Eretz Yisrael, and we had a long discussion. And you see here, what happens is that there's so many achronim that came out against the Mechaber. The Chacham Tzvi was the first one to throw the gauntlet down. And as the Chacham Tzvi says, we know in the Gemara there were constant ole regal from Bava. We know that as a fact. It affects when we say, Tain talumata levracha, right or wrong. And yet we don't find one word of the Gemara in all of Chazal that they observed 2 days in Eretz Yisrael. 2 days, listen quick, he's our minig of atechem biyadechem, is the Gemara in Beitza talks about chutz laaretz, not about Eretz Yisrael. Reb Chaim totally adopted the Chacham Tzvi's psak, and the Reb told me, Reb Chaim said, "Sis nishta eina," there's no one who has yet to give a tshuva on the Chacham Tzvi's question. The Rav told me he asked Reb Moshe, his father, what he should do in 35 when he visited Israel and was here for Shavuot. And it's true it fell that year, Friday and Saturday, how he should daven on Shabbos. And Reb Moshe told him, you have to do like my father said, and on Shabbos you daven like an Israeli, 100%. It's not Yontif, it's just Shabbos. But it's not only the Rav. You go on and on. There's no issue where there's such unanimity on all sides of the fence. The Minchat Laza, how many of you are Hungarians? The Minchat Laza, this is the Munchat Shirov. Paskins La'alacha, it's no different than Kriyat Megillah. Whoever heard of a halacha depends where your mind is. It's Narishkant. Depends where your body is. And if you're in Tel Aviv, you read Megillah on the 14th, even though your wife and children, your bank account, your job, your Sfarim, everything you own, everything is in Yerushalayim, but you're in Tel Aviv, you're in Tel Aviv. You come to Yerushalayim the 15th day, even though you're coming from America, you got off the plane, you come to Yerushalayim, you're chayav in Megillah, Matanit Le'Avyonim, Sudat Purim, whatever goes with Purim on the 15th. On Dot Hayu Raglenu B'Sharayach Yerushalayim. You go on and on. Mori Urebi, and I told you this many times, but it's a Goyne Shavart. Erwin Shapiro, there's a picture, my friend Rakefet's book on the Rav. There's a picture of Erwin Shapiro bent over at a Reitz dinner asking the Rav something, talking with the Rav. You know what he was talking with the Rav? He said, Rebbe, I'm quoting you word by word what they said. He says, Rebbe, I just bought an apartment in the Plaza Hotel in Yerushalayim. I now own an apartment. What do I do when I'm there for Yontif? And the Rav told him, Shapiro, you don't fold Kedusha into your pocket. Quote, end quote. And of course, what the Rav was saying, what the Rav was saying was exactly the Alter Rebbe in the Shulchan Aruch, and the third Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, in his Hashkafah Sefer. It is very simple. In Chutz La'aretz, there are 2 days of Kedusha. Yontif from the Torah, and the rabbis gave the second day Kedusha. If there's Kedusha, herding mogs cannot do Malacha in Dorot Park. He's davening Musaf. In Israel, there's 1 day. There's no second day of Kedusha. So the Rebbe is saying to Irvin Shapiro, Irvin, what are you, an idiot? You're going to take the Kedusha of the Upper East Side, fold it into your pocket, and bring it to Israel? No such thing. And you can go on and on. And there's Chazon Ish agrees with this. Rav Kook agrees with this.
Rav Goren too.
Rav Goren, the major poskim one, Rav Ovadia Yosef, essentially agrees with this. Rav Moshe doesn't. Rav Shlomo Orbach doesn't. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein shifted gears. Very interesting. He followed the Rav, and then he became very close to Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he followed Rav Shlomo Zalman. Very fascinating. Your humble servant has remained constant on the Shaila. Again, I live in Israel. I love Israel. Read B'nativ Hadmama, how it describes little Aaron Rakefet. he is moved beyond words by this description of him, by neutral people. It's not my Talmidim. I love Eretz Yisrael. It hurts me when I see Jews observing Yom Tov Sheni. They are flaunting irresponsibility, and they are pushing away the atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael. So you see, here already...
When I used to come visit, yeah. I asked Rav Tice.
Right.
He said, you've got to keep 2 days.
Had you ever said that?
I had a home and a bank account.
In Israel?
Yes.
So you should have asked Rav Gorin. Why did you ask Rav Tice?
He laughed at me. No. I met him in the Zifron Yaakov 1 year.
Who laughed at you?
Rav Gorin.
For keeping 2 days. Yeah. He should have smacked your face. You're lucky. You're lucky he didn't smack your face. Rav Gorin was a chevron man.
Wait a minute. Rav Tites, he was my brother at that time.
Okay, okay. You had Rav Tites. I'm not going to argue with you. Yes, Nachum.
Rav says in my Freundel jokes that everybody who asks him what to do when they go to Israel, he says keep 1 day, they listen to him. Then all the Israelis come to America, he says keep 2 days, they never listen.
I told you, when I was in America in a hotel for Pesach, and I was keeping 2 days, tens and tens of rabbis came over to talk with me. They couldn't believe that an Israeli is actually keeping 2 days. The only thing is, I did put on tefillin the second day in my room quietly with a, you know, without a bracha, with a tanai. If it's a chiyuv, then it's tefillin. If not, it's a kishut b'yamer, decoration. And I said Shema Yisrael. I said the. No. I daven like what he meant. Same as yeah. I daven like the Americans. I don't. Yeah, but tefillin is a suffix there, right? Of course, I don't mean myself. No, without a bracha. Now, then I asked the Rav, and see, this comes back to my point here. I said, Rebbe, if this is the case that the Chacham Tzvi and Reb Chaim and Reb Moshe and you're so adamant, so how come we should paskin a day and a half lechumrah, you know what they call a day and a half, which really what it means is the second day, not to do malacha d'oraita. So he gave 2 reasons. One reason, respect for the Shulchan Aruch. Follow? Even though we disagree with the Shulchan Aruch, we think differently, but respect for the Shulchan Aruch. Don't do malacha the second day. The Shulchan Aruch paskin, it has kedusha. So at least that much respect we are giving the Shulchan Aruch that we don't do malacha. The second reason the Rav gave may very well be applicable, not to confuse a young student. And you see, this actually happened. I don't want to mention names, it's ancient history already, happened in the 1980s. A very prominent American rabbi took a sabbatical. And he was riding high, he was the king of his community. And he got a substitute for the year. And he finds out the substitute got up and he had learned in Israel and he had observed only 1 day. And he was matir many, many things on Yom Tov Sheni that no Orthodox rabbi would be matir. And the rabbi here, the real rabbi, went back and there was a machleket in public and it ultimately ruined. It didn't have a happy ending. But leave it at that. Sometimes we have to forget what we know. But you see the kid. There was no Yom Tov Sheni here. We all have a calendar today. Was machen sich narisch? What are we making fools out of ourselves? Went back to America and he was matir. All types take showers on Yom Tov Sheni, do this on Yom Tov Sheni. And the Rav of the Kehillah came back and got hysterical in public, embarrassed him. And the wind up was the assistant there had to leave. But the Rav ultimately had to leave too. Because people were offended. You know, you can't get up and embarrass a person in public. And people were offended. But the Rav was very powerful. Why are we makpid nishtan malacha? And that was the Rav's psak. Second day, like Rav Shmuel Salant, the same psak. Meika hadin, it's 1 day. But you have to give respect to the Shulchan Aruch. And there's the factor of students. You know, not everyone is a big Talmud Chacham. Not everyone understands. This is the Gatlet of Chassidut. The older I get, the more I appreciate Chassidut. My world is a world of learning, a world of genius, a world of intellect. But my world is a different world. But not everyone can be like this. You have a Rebbe, of course. Then the problem is, the Rebbe has to be a proper Rebbe. All right. You take a look at Belz. Look what the Belz of Rebbe rebuilt. You got to give credit. He's not the Gadol Hador. All right. But look what he rebuilt. From nothing, from ashes. Look at Bavov in New York. All right, they had a big machlokes now. They split in half. You got to give credit. You got to give credit. But they split in half. You have tens of thousands of chassidim. You need two Bavov or Rebbeim. You need two sons of a Rebbeim. At least Kloisenberg, one is here, one is in Muncie. So there's not that tension between them. Take a look what's going on in Vishnitz and Bnei Brak today with the Yerusha. You need a proper Rebbe. But I can understand Hasidus. Don't confuse the people. Rakefet, a day and a half luchumra. It's the Rav. Credit for the Shulchan Aruch. Now why, I want to tell you. I always tell, when I get a question on Yom Tov Sheni, I always say, do you want me to justify what you're doing, or do you want a psak? If they want me to justify, I can justify a day and a half, 2 days, I'll give them sources. If they want a psak, that's a different story. Usher Weiss comes down 2 days, basically. He comes down like Rav Moshe, like Rav Shlomo Zalman. Hard for me to understand that viewpoint. Hard for me. And by the way, the Tzemach Tzedek in the Sefer Hashkafa about Hasidic thinking. Right, let me just spend, let me end off with this already.
What exactly does that mean, a day and a half, in terms of what's the half that you're not doing?
The half that you're not doing, you're not going to do Malacha D'Oraita. In other words, if someone says to you, for the sake of argument, I want to chop up vegetables for you in a machine, right? He can do it for you. There's no problem of Amir Eli Yisrael here. That's the Rav. I spoke with the Rav. It's a tshuva of the Rashba. But if someone says to you, drive me to the Kotel, you can't drive. You follow me? But you could go in. If he opens the door for you and you sit down in the car, you can go to the Kotel with him. You got to understand what you're doing. It's good. You want a good story? What happened to me? Bididi, have you of the my first sukkah sale? I'm working in the Encyclopedia Judaica, Rehov HaMeiri, where Machon Meir is today. Okay, that's where the encyclopedia came out of that building. So I'm working with a young lady, Rivka Duker. If the name means anything to you today, she's Dr. Rivka Duker. See if she remembers the story. Yeah, it's Dr. Abe Duker's daughter. She married, she has children, she may even have grandchildren. She got married late, she's Fishman. No, it's Rivka Fishman today. So Rivka Duker Fishman. So she tells me her aunt is coming to visit Sukkos, and she knew me because I did my doctorate. Her father was on the committee for my doctorate. And she says to me, Dr. Rothkopf, what should she do, Yom Tov Sheni? And she's staying in a hotel that doesn't exist today, the Tirat Bat Sheva. So on King George, it belongs to the Misrad HaKlita today, to the army group stay there. So I tell her she should observe the first day like Israelis and the second day like Israelis too, but not to do malacha. Not to do malacha. So after Sukkot, my first Sukkot here in Israel, I say to Rivka, what happened with your aunt? She says, oh, Rabbi, she says, you don't really want to know. I say, no, tell me. I'm a big boy. I feel, you know, I've been in the rabbinate 8 years in America. I already knew a great deal of what can go wrong. She says, it was very simple. She came out of her hotel. It's on King George Street. Second day, Yom Tov morning, and she saw Hasidim getting into the bus. She said, that Rabbi Rothkopf doesn't know what he's talking about. Hasidim can get into a bus on Yom Tov. Why can't I? And that was the day of second day Yom Tov. But let me just tell you one more thing. The Tzemach Tzedek, in a sefer that came out with his Hashkafa, Hasidic inferences, and I gave the source years ago, he says something so beautiful. He says in Chutz Laretz, you need 2 days to feel the Kedusha, to feel the Chag, to feel the Simcha. Because that's what his Zayda said. That's the Baal Tanya says in the Rav Shulchan Aruch, the rays that emanate from God. It takes 2 full days to get the full impact. In Israel, we are so close to God. We're close to the Makom HaShechina. Where did I daven this past Friday night? The Kotel HaMa'aravi. Okay? We are so close. Here we get the rays and the full Kedusha, the Simcha, the Hitalut HaNafshit in 1 day. We don't need to. Well, if you take the Alter Rebbe and the way his grandson makes this beautiful insight, you can understand why 1 day is absolutely correct. Unfortunately today, everything is politics, and I often say, it's ha'amratzot chogeget. I'll show you this tomorrow. Ignorance rejoices. Few know how to learn today. People have titles, Rashi Yeshiva, this and that. I once said a vote in the 1960s that there'll come a time that a guy will be called a gaon if he can say pshat in the Tosfos. I'm afraid that time has come. No one learned, no one knows, no one has a feeling for halacha, no one has breitkeit, no one has, to use a modern Hebrew word, hama'of shel Torah Hashem tamima. It's so lacking. So it becomes politics. If you wear a kippah srugah, you observe 1 day in Israel. And if you wear a black hat, you observe 2 days. Amratzit gumura. Nachum, what did you want to say?
Besides Malacha, you wouldn't eat chametz on the last day either.
No, I say you don't eat chametz on the last day. In other words, that's a deal, right?
Or what?
No, chas v'chalila. There's a cheirim kadmon, and anyone eating mesukah and shmini atzeres in Eretz Yisrael is in cheirim, period. It's a cheirim kadmon. Ad kidei kach, this... Not in Eretz Yisrael. Not anyone who has the slightest reyach of Torah in them. In Chutz Laretz, I ate Nesukah. Of course I ate Nesukah Shmini Atzeres. What am I, a guy? It's an open Gemara, guys. Mesechet Mem Zayin Omer Aleph. Yetav Yatvinin. Baruch Lom Baruch Kinnin.
On the last day of Pesach, they serve from Kneit Lach and from Boss. How do you explain that?
But, Baruch Hashem, Azai Vaitan, it's only the Rabbonin, then I'm Achmer. What, you don't remember last year? When the last day Pesach falls on Shabbos, the headlines in Israel, Chasidim Yochlu Matzah Kafuta Ha'erev. You understand? And this last year it happened, you know how many people came over to me? I was davening in the Shtiblach. It was Friday night, Motzai Pesach, right? How many people came over to me, when can we eat the beans? Everyone had legumes, like a chassid eating knedlach and gebrachs. I said, you can eat the beans 18 minutes after sunset. Baruch Hashem. My dear friends, my dear students, let me reiterate. Oh, it's a fascinating topic. You have no idea how fascinating it is, and you have no idea what I'm going to show you next time, and censorship, Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schechter will owe me royalties. Tell him what I'm with the source I'm going to quote in the footnote. It will blow his mind what goes on.
He wrote
on the Netziv, my uncle the Netziv. He wrote in Torah Mada. He wrote a long essay, gave lectures all over, recreating history. He quotes Dr. Joseph Elias. I argued with him, and it's unbelievable. Is history truth, or is history what we want our children to think happened? And then when a kid goes out into the world and faces reality, he falls by the wayside.
Now that question that you just asked would really be good on this. He has an 80-page essay on the girls.
Oh yeah, that's a different story. On
the same question.
On the tzaddik.
Is part of his list.
Okay, you're beside. But you're talking about the Tzadi Gimel Banot of Beis Yaakov, not 92, 93. 93. Gentlemen, to reiterate. All right, these are issues. Look, I lectured on that for weeks. What do you want out of me? I did my share. Did it really happen? As I said, we can't be sure. It could have happened. But it's at least, it could have happened. But it seems it didn't really happen. As far as all the testimony, they claim someone made it up. And the people who knew are no longer alive. In other words, I'll tell you who really knew the truth. Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Lewin, Nat Lewin's father. He knew the truth. But we never got it out of him. And by the time I was smart enough to ask him, he was no longer around. Maybe Nat Lewin should be asked. If anyone's listening who knows Of course, the Reisha Rav, it's his Elter Zayde, Reb Aaron Levine.
No, it's Zayde, not that.
It's an Elter Zayde, I believe.
It's
Zayde. Okay, we'll accept.
Maybe Leo Young, but he was the one who got the
letter. Leo Young could be, but I don't know. He might have been only a ploy, a foil, because they wanted support. He was in a key position.
What was Chaim Golodin's real name?
I don't know offhand if they had a last name yet.
He
but
did, yes.
Yeah, but I don't. I've never heard him refer to anything but the Chaim Golodin.
The
Vilna Gaon was Kramer. Later. I don't know. But the Chaim Golodin, I don't know what the name was. Although probably there may be sources that to come up with it. Gentlemen, what do we do today? We dealt with the Shulchan Aruch, the centrality of the Shulchan Aruch. Can you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? I showed you a tshuva of the Ramah, which he is so, a tshuva of Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, he is so hesitant to paskin against the Ramah. Because when we say the Shulchan Aruch, we mean both of them. And then Yitzchak asked the question, and I was really amazed, because that was the next topic I wanted to discuss. My discussion with the Rav, you better know what you're doing. And a classic example is the quagmire of Yontif Sheni and my whole discussion with the Rav, but ultimately how the Rav was machmir not to do malacha, respect for the Shulchan Aruch. Finally, I just want to show you, and you're welcome to take it, this is just fabulous. This appeared in Mamineicha Yeshua. This is about two American youngsters who came in Aliyah in the 70s. They lived in my house. They were B'nai Bias. I know them very, very well. Fabulous kids. Professor Moshe Kopel and Rabbi Dr. Danny Guttmacher. And every year for Purim, they would put out posters. Halavai, they would put it together in an art volume. But here, they have some of their posters. I just show you one that about Kesef, how are you allowed to use Zionist money? The Kesef Tzioni Beklal Michi Telechem, and they're willing to take all your Zionist money away. And this one up, Meir Sharim. It's beyond words. I have two copies. You're welcome to it. Finally, if anyone has grandchildren or teaching in Israel, this is Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, edited by my student, Rabbi Aryeh Weinberger, who studied with me in BMT in the mid-70s. And here you have fabulous information and all the Chagim in Chodesh Nisan. Tomorrow morning at 9 sharp, 5 to 9, for you, Danny, the public press conference. Tune in again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. What magazine are you carrying there?
Do you want that?
I don't know.
No, that's not true.
All right.